Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
30-minute walk-up music. What was that all about?
Well, I wanted Neil to hear the AC/DC.
No, that's not why. You went to get chicken.
Well, a little column. Oh, also, stuff. I got Advil because the last segment gave me a headache.
You and the listeners. Is that a Florence Yalls jersey?
It is. A Florence Yalls jersey.
Where come from this?
Shout out my boy Pipes. They had like hockey jersey night.
Ah, because I was going to say it looks like a hockey jersey.
And
but it's
and he got it as with my lucky number, 24.
Very impressive.
Yeah, shout out Pipes.
Nice work. And now Neil Knuckles Greenberg joins us to make us all some money. I don't know. That's just, you're really not supposed to say that. But he has some fine insight into the world of sports betting, and he joins us right now. Neil, I think I've asked you this before, but you don't do a lot of player props, or you do? Or how do you factor that into what you do?
I do bet on player props. For me, baseball's the most lucrative only because there's a lot of data, a lot of models that are out there, a lot of projection systems that I trust.
Really? Baseball? I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the strikeouts especially are probably the easiest to model, only because we have so much data on lefty-righty matchups and how to regress those for small sample size of games and pitches, et cetera. It's just a very mature analytical data pool. So for me, that's been the easiest. But also, NBA rebounds have been pretty good for me.
Mm.
So I think those are probably the two that I do the most.
What are you doing about? I mean, you can't help but notice that the scoring in the playoffs is down like 20% from the regular season. I mean, we had a whole bunch of regular season games that were 140 to 130, 135, 128, and now you had a whole bunch of games when neither team didn't score 100, neither team scored 100, and those that did barely broke the 100-point mark. How do you incorporate that into kind of working models for figuring stuff out? Because a lot of the matchups and things, I guess, are predicated on what went on during the regular season, but the playoffs are a whole different animal.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is pace-driven, meaning there aren't as many possessions during the playoffs as there are in the regular season. But just like anything else, you have to investigate why it's happening. So, if it's a shooting issue and teams are not shooting as well, why is that? Is that just some bad luck across the league that happened at one time? I mean, that's certainly possible. If it is a tempo issue, how many possessions each team is getting, like why is it so slow compared to the regular season? What's being done? Is it the rotations? I mean, the starting rotations play more. There's also more hero ball type stuff in the playoffs, whereas there's some tape and you do a lot of you do a lot of focus on one opponent as opposed to having three opponents in the next 5 days or whatever. Also, superstars will take the ball in their own hands more, thus more isolation type stuff. It's just a lot of different factors. You'd have to really look. For me right now, on a cursory glance, I'm looking at the tempo. And I'm not sure, you know, I would wait it. I wouldn't necessarily discard everything that's happened beforehand. Just try to figure out, you know, is there any part of it that's not sustainable, and then just try to bet accordingly.
Interesting. Neil Greenberg's with us here talking about a lot of things. We'll get into it in more depth next week. We'll have the post positions and everything else, but I didn't realize this. Final fractions, fast final fractions, which is fun to say, you say have been a good barometer for Kentucky Derby success. Recently or all time, or how do you factor that in?
More all time than recently. What you're looking at specifically is the last eighth mile and the last three-eighths of a mile of the prep before the Kentucky Derby. And you want to see them cover the final eighth of a mile in 13 seconds or less, the final three-eighths of a mile in 38 seconds or less.
Mm.
9 of the last 12 Kentucky Derby winners finished the final three-eighths in less than 38 seconds, 19 of the last 26. It hasn't really held as much recently. Authentic didn't have it. Medina Spirit, obviously there was some weirdness there. Rich Strike did, and then Mage did not. But again, it's held pretty well over the course of the last, you know, two decades. So specifically the Bluegrass Stakes, which is a major prep, had relatively slow final fractions in those regards. The winner of the Bluegrass just made the cutoff. Sierra Leone just made the cutoffs of 13 seconds and 38 seconds. So what that means is, from this data point, you can pretty much toss any horse that came in second or worse if they're in the Kentucky Derby from win consideration.
How about, again, you know, it always comes down to value, or not always, but I mean frequently it does for who people choose to select. But if you're just looking at trying to identify the winner, my friend Fred Calgill, who just left us a short moment ago, is a big fan of Fierceness. Who do you think is the best horse in this field?
Yeah, I mean, Fierceness certainly has a lot to like, and if he fires the way that he's been firing, then certainly, you know, he probably is the best horse in the field. Has the speed to do it, has the pedigree to carry that speed 10 furlongs. My only challenge with Fierceness at this point, aside from post position, because we don't know what the post position is going to be, is this appears to be going to be a faster pace than normal at the beginning. Fierceness is a front-running horse. He may have some other, you know, he's going to have some other competition there with Track Phantom, with Dornick, with Grandmother First, with T.O. Password. So there's going to be a lot of speed at the front, and then you have to think about any horses that are inside that may not be speed horses, meaning early speed. You know, they have to get out early to avoid the traffic. So I think that works against him in this race specifically. But I think he's a great horse. I mean, he's certainly done what they've asked him to do. He's, you know, he's fast, and as I say, his breeding certainly looks to have enough stamina to carry that speed through the 1.25 miles. My concern, though, is the pace of the race and what that's going to look like once we get the post position draw.
Well, I, as somebody just as a fan, loves closers, and if you think this is a race that's going to have a lot of speed to run it, then Sierra Leone might be your horse, because that horse is a closing monster.
I'm a little bit worried about the pedigree there. I do like Anna Marie. I think Anna Marie is a closer that does have the stamina that you'd need to get this the whole way. You know, Sierra Leone, he will definitely need the pace that we're talking about to make it. Personally, I like Anna Marie a little bit better. I think the price is going to be significantly better, but, absolutely Sierra Leone, you know, as long as he doesn't have to, deal with traffic, which is always a challenge with these closers, certainly has a good chance to be part of the to be part of the win there.
Very little time left, but let's tackle a couple of things off the racetrack. The NBA playoffs underway, the NHL playoffs underway. A lot of talk, even though the Celtics ran away with the best regular season record, that the insiders still think the defending champion Denver Nuggets are the team to beat. Where do you weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit down on Boston coming in. I was higher on Indiana, on the Pacers than most, I think. Home teams have certainly done what they needed to do in both of the playoffs that you mentioned. A lot of chalk flying out there. I'm not a big supporter of Boston in terms of winning it all. So I would go with an alternative there. But I still like the Pacers as kind of like the sneaky team to emerge out of the first round that's not completely chalk.
Wow. Yeah, because the home team has won every game so far, by the way, after the play-in.
In both the NHL and NBA.
Incredible. Now, I think that's like 20 or some odd years since that happened. It's been rather remarkable. The NHL, always known for lots of early first-round upsets, very chalky as well so far. What do you make on that side? Well, actually, Toronto finally won a game last night at Boston.
Oh, okay, so there you go. Yeah. So one. I was more surprised that the NHL was as chalky as it was because, like you said, I mean, it's hockey. We see a lot of weird things happening. The Islanders, sheesh.
Right, good Lord.
Absolutely embarrassed. Washington needs a much more complete game than they had against the Rangers the other night. The Rangers did a great job, especially on the penalty kill, making sure that Washington didn't get it set up in the zone. They have a lot of skilled players on their penalty kill, the Rangers do, which is a little bit of a departure from what we've seen, you know, just around the league in terms of penalty killers. So, you know, that's just a neat little wrinkle. I think Washington has a much better chance than people are giving them credit for to win this series.
Wow.
I still think that they're very much an underdog, especially after the first, you know, the game one loss. But I do like Winnipeg. If we're talking about like these dark horse Cinderella teams, I like Winnipeg to make it out of here.
How about you like totals in hockey? Like Winnipeg and Colorado scored 13 goals in their first game, 7-6.
Yeah, I do like totals in hockey because I think, you know, it's probably the easiest to handicap of your totals, money line, or, you know, I guess the puck line. But again, I mean, hockey is so fluky. I don't really bet a lot of hockey only because it's really tough to manage the luck component, which I believe to be very high. But from a team standpoint in terms of, you know, how good they are after adjusting for strength of schedule and, you know, where they are in the pecking order, I think Winnipeg jumps out at me as a team to look at, not only to get out of the first round, but have a little bit of a piece for them to win the Stanley Cup.
We will catch up with you next week, Derby week, and we'll pick your brain. So we appreciate it.
I can't wait. I love it.
Look forward to it, Neil. Thanks. Take care of yourself.
All right.
Neil Knuckles Greenberg with us here. Actually, there were two road games, one in the NHL last night. I forgot. Dallas lost also.
Right.
So two. Those are the first two, and they were the last two games
on the slate.
On the slate for the NBA and the NHL going through last night. So it's still rather a remarkable run. How many games is that exactly? It's a lot. Let's see. I know the NBA had 11. That I already counted. But so the NHL, let's see how many they had strung together since these playoffs got underway. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They had 7. So it was 18 straight games before a road team won a game. Toronto beat Boston in Boston. And then Vegas beat Dallas in Dallas. Edmonton rounded back, got the home streak going again, 7-4. I don't know what – that's a really weird dynamic. I don't know why that is, but if you look in history, I swear it seems like it's true. The Western teams in basketball and hockey always play higher-scoring games. It makes no sense. There's no rhyme nor reason for that, but I swear it's true. It is definitely true. And the Edmonton Oilers, their glory days, they were winning. It was like old Eastern Hockey League games. They were winning playoff games like 9-6.
I felt so bad for Grant Fuhr in those games.
Yeah, they didn't care. They were
Hey, keep it to try to under 8.
Try and keep it in single digits, and we'll cover you.
Yeah, we got you. It was just barraged.
That was bizarre. But same thing in the NBA. And you see it here in the playoffs again. You got Edmonton and L.A. scored 11 goals in their game. You had on Sunday, you had Winnipeg and Colorado scored 13 goals in their game. It's just, you don't see that in the East. The East, the Rangers and Caps had 5 goals. Florida and Tampa Bay had 5 goals. Toronto and Boston, 5 goals. Carolina and the Islanders should have been a low-scoring game, but then the Islanders had a brain lock. That's going to cost them the series there. That's crazy.
Yeah, what happened? I was working last night at the restaurant, so I didn't get to see. I watched a little bit of the Islanders.
They just all
I watched Toronto and Boston. We had that on the TV, but
they were up 3-0. They had 3-goal lead, and they gave up like a gazillion goals.
No, they say that's the worst lead in hockey. Oh, no, 3-goal lead.
2-goal lead is what they say.
Yeah,
but still, it's they were ahead. I think it was at the end of the first period. I think it was 2-0 at the end of the first period, and then the second period. I know they scored the first goal, so it was 3-0. And then finally they gave it. Well, then Carolina started to come back. They scored a goal with about 13 minutes left in the second period, made it 3-1. So they still entered the third period with a 2-goal. That's the one everybody dreads, the 2-goal lead. They had a 3-1 lead. They had a 3-1 lead. 3-1 lead. 3-1 lead. And then Carolina scored to make it 3-2 with about 10.5 minutes to play. Still the Islanders nursing that 1-goal lead. It's 3-2, 3-2 to the point where Carolina had to pull their goaltender. They pulled the goalie with about two and a half minutes to go, scored at 17:45, scored again at 17:54. So they scored 2 goals in 9 seconds, and then they got another goal at 19:04. So in the space of 1 minute and 19 seconds, they scored 3 goals in the playoffs. Yikes. So that was not good for the Islanders. Anyway, so that's what's going on. Just if you're looking on the docket tonight, Rangers and Caps have a 7 o'clock face-off there. Florida and Tampa Bay, 7:30. Those are both game twos. All these are game twos. Winnipeg and Colorado, game two. And Vancouver and Nashville in game two. In the NBA, the slate is as follows. Phoenix in Minnesota. How about Edwards talking some serious smack in that series? You see that? He was woofing.
He was?
Oh, yeah. That was interesting. I think everybody does in the NBA, I guess, to some degree. That's kind of the way of the world. I guess it goes on in every sport. But, in basketball, you're closer to the players, and there's no equipment. There's not wearing helmets, so you see it more. Speaking of the woofing, we got to get into this, too, by the way.
Okay.
Minnesota, let's give you the rest of the schedule. Minnesota and Phoenix, that's game two. Minnesota leads 1-0. That's at 7:30. 8:30, Milwaukee is hosting Indianapolis. Milwaukee has a 1-game lead there. I guess some people are buying into the Indianapolis thing because and Milwaukee's nicked up also. That's a big factor. But they're only a 1.5 favorite at home, and that's 1-0. And then the Clippers in Dallas. Clippers are a 1.5 favorite over Dallas. That game is at 10 o'clock. TNT for the first game, NBA TV for the second, and TNT for the third game. Did you see? I think you might have to bleep this. I'm not sure.
Sorry, I just saw this fact. I have to say this.
Okay.
It just popped on my Twitter feed. Fun fact, Tony Gwynn struck out 188 times in the 90s. Shohei Ohtani struck out 189 times last year.
Well, that's,
this is the change of baseball.
Hitters. It's a different philosophy of the game. This is amazing, and it's really a shame. Umpires, when they act like this.
Oh, God, I did see this.
Aaron Boone.
Pathetic.
It's Hunter Wendelstadt, who's the son of a very long time and Major League umpire. What was his father's first name? Harvey Wendelstadt? I don't remember. I don't know what his father was a very successful umpire. Now his son is. And now this is what transpired. And you're going to have to – I don't know how we're going to do this because I don't think they have it bleeped. But this is literally in the first 5 pitches of the game. And Boone is arguing that a ball that hit the batter for the other team should have been called a strike because he swung at it. If you swing at it and it hits you, you don't get first base.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but they so I guess he looked at the review. The umpire looked at the review, and this was the second batter of the game, and he said to him, I looked at it, like, what more do you want from me? Now shut up. And he tells Boone to keep quiet, and Boone is at the end of the dugout, and the camera's on him, so this is not as powerful on the radio, but he does. He literally doesn't say anything, and I'm going to try and play it, so be ready with the dumper. We might have to dump it here. But,
so I don't know if anyone else is watching the Yankees game, but Aaron Boone just got ejected 5 pitches into the game. He already had a warning, and now he's been ejected for saying nothing. Brian Menduk, huge Yankees fan, my associate head coach for 17U Antonelli Baseball, he's a huge Yankees fan. He just sent this over and said, this reminded him so much of Georgia a few years ago. I'll tell that story in a second.
I don't want the story. I want the actual footage. Here's the footage. Here it comes.
Boone has already had a warning, right. And now here he goes. He's just—he's literally just checking his nails right
here.
He's looking at his nails.
Disgustedly looking.
And the home plate umpire just screams, "Aaron, you're done."
Aaron, there you go. And now Aaron's saying, "I didn't say anything." Aaron's saying, "Hold on a second, I didn't say a word."
And Boone goes bananas, as well he should. He starts pointing up at the stand, saying it came from there, it wasn't him. He even drops a, I swear to God. Then he's going to start to head out and tell him it's bullshit. The umpire says, I don't care. And Aaron goes, what do you mean you don't care?
Yeah, that was the strangest line of all. He says to him, it wasn't me, it was a guy in the crowd. And the umpire says, I don't care. He says, what do you mean you don't care? Well, you threw me out. What the umpire tried to say later, which was equally ridiculous, was, well, it's your dugout. It came from your dugout, and so you take responsibility. If I don't know who said it, I have the right to bounce the manager. I guess, I wish we had...
Nate, we need our boy
we need Nate.
Nate
here. I guess that's true. I mean, I've seen that happen in basketball.
I mean, I guess you're supposed to have, yeah, like
the bench. They get a text. I'm not listening to you guys anymore. They tee the coach, and he's responsible for his bench. But the fact of the matter is, you got to at least be certain it came from the bench or the dugout. This is you can see the guy right behind him yelling at him. It's the guy in the second row right behind the dugout. Boone literally is saying nothing. He's just disgusted. You know, we've all kind of done that thing. We're just kind of looking at our nails, like, you know, when you're so fed up,
right?
And the guy bounced, you're gone. He said, Boone is so exasperated, he doesn't know who to appeal to. He turns like the third base up by, he turns to the crowd, and he starts pointing at the guy in the stands. That was that guy. That's quality. That is quality entertainment and awful umpiring. Speaking of all awful umpiring,
the umpires are getting a beating.
Well, but you know what's interesting?
Between Angel Hernandez.
Yeah, but Hernandez, I'm finding out, is not the least accurate umpire. They have those charts now. There's at least a couple of guys that are consistently worse than he is. It's just become his brand,
right,
that he's so
internet,
bad.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other guys that are equal, even worse. And in key situations, what they call the high leverage. That's a new term.
Another analytic? We have an analytic
high
for
leverage. It's a high leverage
we
situation.
We have an analytic for calls.
It's a high leverage situation. Texter says,
I love
this,
analytics.
Before
but,
we get to our, do we do our break? We didn't do it yet.
We didn't do a top of the hour break. That's okay.
This is a good point, a fair point. Texter says, I must give credit where it's due. Bob, I was curious your opinion on the expectations for U of L and UK basketball next season. I've argued they should be similar expectations. Get into the NCAA tournament, hope for the best. I keep hearing a lot of people saying, well, UK should have that expectation, but U of L should be happy if they have a winning season and get to the NIT. Forget about the specific expectation, Texter says, and this is the point of the text. Why would it be any different? Both teams are starting from scratch. Zero players, and these teams going forward seemingly have the same starting line. What are your thoughts? I think I'm doing Johnny Two Sides here. I'm Nicky Johnny Two Siding it.
Nicky Johnny Two Siding it. That's a
because
lot.
The fact is, he's right. You know, I mean, he's right. They're both programs that are basically starting with a bare cupboard, by and large, you know, and they're both brand name programs. I mean, they have histories. The fact that Kentucky's been better by a wide margin in recent years, how does that factor in? Arguably, it shouldn't. But I also look at it the other way, that I understand it, that It's very – I've often – I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I've said for years the second hardest thing to do is to win. The hardest thing to do is to win after you've lost for a significant period of time. I don't know whether that's just psychological. Teams don't expect – there's no more intimidation factor. I mean, Kenny used to talk about that all the time, that, you know, people don't shake, you know, when they see Louisville on the front of the jersey anymore. And that's true because they didn't have a good team. So I do think there's – I think it's legitimate to have a little bit more expectation for UK. Sorry, because I don't think that I can't – I don't know whether it's psychological, physical, what exactly the reason is, but I'm not going to contradict myself. I think the second hardest thing to do is winning. The hardest thing to do is winning after you've lost for a while. Kentucky hasn't lost. They just haven't won at the level they used to. Louisville's been losing and losing and losing. And I don't know, you know, you're right. Texter, you are right. I'm giving credit where it's due. There should be no reason that that's a factor if you've got all kids who weren't here. What difference does it make to them? They don't know any better. They weren't here. But it just, it does, it plays out that way. Now, I don't know. Again, I'm Johnny Five-siding it here because now I'm going all the way around again. That has always been the case in the past, but in the past, a lot of the players were still in the program, you know, a program that had lost for a while. They had a lot of those players back, so that made it arguably harder, as I said, harder to win after you've lost for a while. Now, everybody's getting a fresh start with new players. So I don't know. I think that whether or not the expectations should be get into the NCAA tournament or not, your point may be a valid one that, you know, if everybody's starting from scratch, what difference should it make? The only thing I will say is this. I didn't Jeff Gooden tweet this out? I thought it was Gooden. I think he was taking a shot at the people who are denigrating the mid-majors. It might not have been him. It might have been another guy who's exactly right, by the way. There's another thread, which I don't want to open that can of worms now, because I don't know the man at all. I've never had anything to do with Greg Sankey at all. But he's kind of lost his mind. He really has.
Okay.
No, I mean, he really has because...
How so?
Well, you should read this thread that when they didn't take his offer, he wanted to be the guy that when he put the new playoff structure in place for football and they passed on it, it's almost been like he's vindictive since now. He is... the series of decisions he's making do not jibe with what the facts are. They are just almost very, very... Not even a significant effort at glossing over the fact. It's just about I want more money for the SEC. And you could argue, well, that's his job. He's the SEC commissioner. But he also is a guy with ostensibly an obligation to college athletics in general. And it looks like he doesn't even care. He's just like, oh, yeah, well, you didn't let me get my way last time, so now screw you guys. And the argument being, and I understand. I agree 100%, by the way. I don't think it was Jeff Goodman. I'd give credit where it was due. I have to go dig it up again. I read so much stuff trying to – you know, get thoughts together for the show. And this was an interesting one. And it was that, you know, he's hell-bent now. You remember he came out with that argument that, well, you know, we've got to reward like competitors. I don't remember the term he used, some made-up cockamamie thing, which basically was a veiled threat to say maybe we shouldn't even have automatic qualifiers. Maybe we shouldn't even allow the Northeast Conference and those teams.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing this.
Why are you even allowing them in? Because he'd like 10 teams from the SEC in. And if that means that a league that's a single bid league now doesn't even get represented, his mindset was like too damn bad. And most everybody who loves college basketball cringes at that. And it's scary that it looked like it may get some traction. And so the point was the people in that camp that want all the money instead of just the big crux of the money, they pass off things, which is kind of unfortunately the way of the world now. You don't actually spend the time to care about whether it's accurate or not. You just say it. And if you say it with authority, then it becomes considered as fact. And so fortunately, there are people out there that call other people on that. And it wasn't Goodman. It was somebody else who did that and said the argument, because what they said is, well, they get in the tournament, they're just taking up a spot, and they never really go very far. And there's been a team from one-bid leagues that have gone I forget what the number is, but a number of teams have gone to the Elite Eight, a number have gone to the Final Four in the last, like, even 5 years. It's just, it's right. So that argument, they said, well, there's other things. They are the schools that, you know, right now they're serving just as like springboards for the power of six. All the transfer portals filled with guys, even the players know that they start at these lower schools and they want to then go up to the power six. And he sent the tweet out that, like, in the ACC, the number of teams that have put players into the portal, in the number of players, rather, from all the teams in the conference, the whole, like, Louisville's got the whole roster, and others have had seven and six. And so my point behind that was to amplify what I just said a moment ago, that one of the reasons why there should be maybe higher expectations for other schools is that for all the quote-unquote movement in the portal, nobody has had the whole roster in like Louisville has. Louisville's had.
And like UK is going to have.
Well, yes, but I'm saying, but so, you know, that's true. But Louisville's got like 10 different guys out. And so the expectations that they can suddenly win now with nobody being back, okay, could be tempered. Now, could you say that about UK? Maybe, okay. But I'm discussing U of L right now. But the point also was that that's another falsity, that the portal is just about, you know, these low majors trying to climb up the ladder and grab a piece of the money or something. I don't know. But the fact is, it's not true. There's no higher percentage in the – they're transferring from everywhere. They're transferring from everywhere to everywhere.
Like, right, right.
I wish that – so
from, again, it, from and to is a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's just – it's ridiculous. So it's just – anyway, I found that interesting that Sankey was –
he just wants more.
He just wants all of it.
It just because it just matters more to him.
By the way, Matt Cross is in the portal again. I can't believe he's still playing. Isn't he 30? How old is he now? It's God bless him. I take him back here. I know it would never happen, but I mean, it's like getting back with your first girlfriend after you've broken up for a while. But he's in the portal at UMass. He played well for them last year. That kid had a toughness to him. I like him. So anyway, that's. The thing is, there's a lot of things before we move on to other topics. All it's kind of like in Ghostbusters when they were in the room and they're not allowed to cross their guns. You know, if they cross,
they never cross streams.
They cross the streams.
Yeah,
that's what we're looking at now. There's a stream going on about what are we doing about paying the players. Legitimate discussion. What are we doing about the transfer portal? Legitimate discussion. What are we doing about college football and playoffs? Legitimate stream. What are we doing about football's alignment and as it impacts the other schools, like the other sports, I mean? Like, should, you know, Rutgers volleyball team have to play against Oregon's volleyball team? Should they have to travel across the country? Is that really good for that sport? May make sense for TV markets for football, but, you know, are all the other sports going to go their way? That's a legitimate discussion. And then the fifth one is this. The people who have taken seats of power, are they really looking out for the good of college sports or just for the good of their own conference and for as getting as much of a piece of that pie as they can for themselves? And you can argue maybe that's what they should be doing, but I argue that they shouldn't. And so you got five of those streams all going, and they're not really integrated yet. And if any of them cross, they're going to blow the whole thing up, just like in the movie. That's really what you're looking at. It really is. I mean, that's the way it strikes me. And so somebody is going to have to navigate these things and have them coexist, if not integrate them, because it may not be possible to integrate them fully. But that's where we are. That's really what it is. And that's why for people who love, if you're a fan, I mean, I don't have a dog in the fight for – I do it to some degree. I mean, if I'm still doing the Louisville games, and right now I am. And so I obviously want to know where we're going. Am I flying to California? Am I flying to Alaska? I mean, I want to know those things. But by and large, those aren't my worries. I don't have to raise the money for the NIL. That's, again, Josh and his team's problems, not mine. But as a fan, I do. I don't want this thing shot to hell because of one or two guys' egos or because of their greed or because of football. When it's got nothing against football, do your thing. Go ahead, man. Put your seven super conferences together and fly all over. You're only playing once a week. Go wherever the hell you want. But to do that for all the other sports just seems grossly unfair and grossly short-sighted. I'll be honest. Even it's the first time because of COVID, my bypass, my stage 4 cancer, the pneumonia. I haven't been to the Final Four in probably, I don't even know, Nick. 8 years, maybe? Probably about 8 years.
Wow.
8, 10 years? Might be.
Yeah.
Might be. And it's awful now. I mean, it's just, I don't know how they can justify charging that amount of money to people to try and get into that just so you can say you're in the arena. It's you can't see anything. You can't see you just, it's like going to a sports bar with a gargantuan four-sided TV in the middle. You watch the game on that. And it's a shame. It's just, I think it's a shame. Maybe there are other people who, like if I was a UConn fan, maybe they would say, oh, you went, when you went and U of L won it in the Dome in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was still awesome.
It was, okay. But I wasn't struck with the seats being as awful. I don't know why.
I was up, though. To be on, I saw.
If
I
ever
saw
you go to a Dome, let me give you advice. Go up.
Yeah.
Like, because if you're down.
I was in the uppiest of up.
Doesn't matter. At least you can look down and you can watch. I watched the Kansas win over Cal when he was at Memphis. And they had moved. That's when they first started to move the media off the floor. And so they were a little grumpy. But we were up high, but fabulous seats. I mean, right mid-court line up high. I didn't have a problem. Where I was this year is on the baseline, and because they have to make it so everybody can see, there's very little elevation change going all the way out. And I swear it looked like I was a quarter of a mile from the court, and you're hardly up at all. So you can't see anything. I couldn't even see the players during the starting introductions. It was – and I didn't – you know, I'm not
– your vantage point that you tweeted was terrible.
I mean, underscored how bad it was. And I'm not going to be that guy. I went to a tournament many years ago. The guy's actually a friend of mine now. I didn't know him at the time, and so I don't want to mention him by name. But we were sitting – this is when I – it's a long time ago now because I had just gotten out of coaching. That's 25 years ago, I guess. And, you know, the coaches get seats too. It's their convention. And I'll never forget this. We were sitting – so it's my first year in the media. And because I'm in the media, we had a seat that was – I was literally – if I stood up and reached forward, I could have tapped Jim Calhoun on the back of his shoulder. I mean, we were that close behind the benches, the UConn bench in that particular game. And I was sitting there, and the guy next to me said,
leg room, it's unbelievable, a leg room. There's no leg room.
Because we were in the front row, and, you know, you got that bar there that's, you know,
no leg room.
And meanwhile, I turn around and I look, and I'm not kidding, and I see Denny. I'd see Denny Crum, and he's sitting in front of another, I forget who it was, another Hall of Famer, and they're up, like, they look like raisins from where I'm sitting. And I wanted to so badly grab this guy and say, hey, come here, jackass. Look, see that guy up there? Those two guys up there between them have, like, 2,000 wins. They're both in the Hall of Fame. And that's where they're sitting, and you're making, you know, leg room? I hope you. You're like, well, let me take your legs and shove behind your head. Now you got plenty of leg room, you arrogant bastard. I mean, it annoyed me no end. So believe me, we were down very close to the court. And then they've gradually moved us away, too, and I get it. I don't like it necessarily, but I, to some degree, understand it. You can still cover the event. You know, you can still go down and get in the locker room and everything. But now, especially as a fan, I can't fathom spending the amount of money you have to spend to go. I mean, if you want to go and be part of FanFest, like I went to a I've covered two Super Bowls without going to either game. It was fun. It was great.
I mean, yeah, the fan fest and everything.
And I had media day. I went in the stadium, the media day, and you right. walk around, and it was fun. But to pay all that money to think you're going to watch the game, you've got to be nuts, to be honest with you. Again, it's all part of what you're – like I've said this before on the show. I went and saw Paul McCartney at Great American Ballpark. We were sitting on what was the third base box seats – about a little bit past where third base itself would be. And they had set the stage up. Concerts all do it differently. Sometimes you're like in the pitcher's mound, sometimes second base. This was, he was literally out on the warning track in dead center field. Okay, that's how they chose to do it. And they had these enormous, they must have been 100 feet high. I don't know, maybe that's an exaggeration. You know, the jumbotrons on either side of the stage. And basically you watch most of the show. You look a little bit at them actually playing, but then you look on the jumbotron. You watch most of the show from the jumbotron, and you get the experience of the video. They have a lot of video stuff going on behind the stage, and you get to hear them. You know, it sounds great. Okay, so that's that I can understand to some degree. But the basketball part of it, I don't know. You just they would have been great seats for the Arizona Cardinals. I would have been like – four rows off the end zone, but not so much for basketball, which was way out there, and then the basket's in the way, and it's just.
I was shocked at this photo you showed.
Oh, I was heartbroken. I want to say heartbroken because I'm grateful to be there, but I didn't have to pay for it. You know, like the guy with, I wanted to jam his legs behind his head there. You know, I'm grateful. I didn't have to pay for anything. It was a Westwood One invitation thing, and I was grateful to do it. And I would go do the exact same thing again. If every year they have me, I'll be delighted to do it. But I will tell you, as a fan, I would think twice before I paid for tickets to go do all that.
At least on the ground there.
That's nutty.
Four level seats, I would definitely.
That is bizarro land there. That's just, I don't know. Like I said, domes are great, but I guess that's how Greg Sankey gets, and he wants all his money, because they moved it. It used to be in a dome, and they didn't, you know, set it up like in the center of a football field. Like if that, when you go to the, I brought this up on the show so many times, but it's so true. If you go to see a game at the Carrier, I don't know what it's called now, the dome where Syracuse plays. If you visualize a football stadium, okay, imagine the basketball court going perpendicular to the football field across the end zone. All right, there's enough room there to lay it there so it goes across by the end zone, not right on the end zone, but right about, that's where it is. Okay. And so you can use the seating from the stadium on three sides of the court. You'll go on one side, and then the end line, and then the other side. And then actually, it'll go on the side. It'll go on both end lines and one sideline. On the other sideline, they build a. I don't build it. I mean, it's retractable. They wheel it in. They wheel it out when they're going to play football or lacrosse there. But it's the other sideline, and it goes, I don't know, 25 rows up. So you got the three tiers, or however many tiers of the stadium, all the way at the top on three sides. And on one side, you got a stand that goes up a certain degree. And you could probably seat, I'm going to guess, 35,000 that way. I think that's enough.
That's plenty.
But this one had 70,000.
Right.
That's a lot more. You know what that's a lot more of?
Money.
All right, take a break. We'll come back. We're doing the race or Kirk now?
Tim Kirkchen.
Tim Kirkchen now, and then a V Stakes coming up. Stay with us, ESPN 680 105.7.
More V Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
You know, if you've done the show for 20 some odd years, you run the risk of forgetting crap. And so I might very well have asked our next guest this very question once before. So if I have, I apologize to him and to you. Our next guest is the Hall of Famer, Tim Kirkchen, who joins us, and we're always delighted when he has a few minutes for us. And we'll talk some more contemporary things. But I don't know very many guys who enjoy the esoteric, perhaps, more than you do. For example, just a short while ago when the eclipse was going on, you released an all-eclipse team, which cracked me up. I thought that was fantastic. Fernando Lunar, Moon Mullen, Ray Knight, Alvin Dark. So here's my question. This isn't quite so esoteric, but I find it interesting. I am a guy who loves to watch old baseball videos and stuff, and now YouTube, there's always stuff coming out. I listen to old radio broadcasts. And the one thing I cannot figure out when it started, no one can seemingly give me a definitive answer, maybe you know, but the routine now when the game is over and the team wins, they congratulate themselves. They meet at the pitcher's mound, and the guys come off the field and shake hands with all the guys on the bench. And it's like what a lot of other sports do, where you shake hands with the opponent, but they shake hands with themselves. And that, I don't know when it started. I can't find the definitive time. I know that, like, when games ended in the 70s, 60s, and 70s, they just ran off the field. They would very often meet the pitcher as they walked to the dugout and pound him on the back and do that. But I don't remember the absolute ritual now where every win is celebrated with the handshake at the pitcher's mound. Do you have any insight into that? Do you have any idea where that started?
Bob, that's a really good question. I can tell you this. Cal Ripken retired in 2001. So he was still playing when the Orioles, at his urging, the Orioles would shake hands with each other on the field
after every game.
Uh-huh.
Cal Jr. has these enormous hands. And the one thing, and he kind of makes fun of it, you got to have a good, firm handshake and look another person in the eye when you shake his hand. And he used to really accentuate that after every game, that he would look every teammate right in the eye and shake his hand very firmly, like he's meeting him for the first time, as opposed to just some little high five, okay? So that was the late 90s.
Okay.
So I know for sure that the Orioles were doing that in the late 90s. Now, before that, I'm not quite sure, but I can promise you this isn't something that just started 10 years ago, because they were doing it with Cal Ripken's urging in the late
90s. I would think that's when it would have started, whether he was they were the team to start it might be, because that's about right. I don't, you know, I watch games from the 80s and I don't see them doing it, and in the 70s I don't see them doing it, and then that's about right there, I would think. Because I do remember that the Yankees, well, what year was that you mentioned from Cal? What, Ripken, when do you think that
Junior
was?
Junior retired in 2001, and he played obviously right up until then. So I'm going to say late 90s Orioles is the first time I can remember. That doesn't mean it wasn't happening before then, but I remember that distinctly.
Because I remember the dominant run of the Yankees in the late 90s. I seem to remember Joe Torre coming out. They were shaking hands. They seem to be doing that, I think. So maybe that's when it started, late 90s. Maybe the Orioles started a little before that, and then the Yankees stole it. I don't know, but it's funny how that became the norm when nobody did it before and everybody does it since. And it's just kind of a weird thing. So I'm gonna define it as late 90s. That's what I'm gonna say. That's my story.
Right. Well, as you know, Bob, things have changed a lot in baseball. Okay, when you used to hit a walk off homer, the entire team didn't always show up when you hit a walk off homer. Now,
also true.
Best one ever was when Prince Fielder hit a walk off homer years ago for the Brewers. And the entire team, you know, gathered at home plate, and he pretended to be a bowling ball, and he did a forward roll, and all his teammates were the pins on the bowling alley, and they all fell down at the same time. So I'm not saying that you should be doing that, but that was pretty darn creative.
Well, I mean, I'm glad they're having some fun. There was a lot of times early where it seemed like you weren't allowed to have fun. If you had fun, the next time you came to the plate, the pitcher was going to put one in the ear hole of your helmet, it seemed like. Now it seems like they're a little bit more tolerant of that, which is good for the game, I think, don't you?
Right, it's good. I'm all for having fun, but there's a time and place for everything.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, fair, safe to say. Tim Kirkchin's with us. Let's talk about this very early baseball season where we're basically, what, an eighth of the way in, I guess, right? About 20-some-odd games in 160. Anybody jumping out at you as fraudulent, or anybody playing way over their heads, or you people establishing themselves as that team is really that good? What do you see in the early going, Tim?
Well, I'm really happy, Bob, that a bunch of teams who weren't supposed to be very good have been very good. Speaking to directly what I speak about all the time is how beautiful the game is, that teams that aren't supposed to be good suddenly are, and vice versa. Like the Guardians, I just didn't think could score nearly enough runs to get off to a great start. And then when Shane Bieber went down, I thought, oh boy, they're really in trouble. And instead, they played exceptionally well. The Royals lost 106 games last year, and they played pretty darn well at whatever it is, 13-10 now. And they have a pretty young, hungry, athletic, offensive team with some decent starting pitching. The Pirates got off to a great start. They've fallen back a little bit. The Brewers have lost so much. Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, Josh Hader, Devin Williams. And instead of fading, they have moved forward. So this is why I love baseball so much. One of the many reasons is that you get a month into the season, sometimes 6 months into the season, and you slap your forehead and said, how did that happen? Where did that come from? Well, it's happening in a bunch of places in baseball so far, and I think it's a very, very healthy sign for the game that you don't have to have the biggest payroll or all the best players. You can still win, just like the Nationals went on the road and beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3 the other day.
Yep.
You know, that's good for baseball. I've always said that.
Let's have a little Schadenfreude, though, shall we? And have some enjoyment for some team's misery. Was it C. Trent Rosecrans, Nick? I don't remember. One of the writers said in all his years, and he's been covering baseball for a long time, the Chicago White Sox are the worst team he's ever seen. They're playing to that level, 3-19, but is that a little hasty, or are they in the discussion of among the worst teams you've ever seen?
Well, Bob, you got to remember who you're talking to here. I covered the 88 Orioles.
Oh, dear God.
Who lost their first 21 games to start the season.
I remember that.
And 21. And even though they didn't finish up with the worst record ever, the 62 Mets still own that. The White Sox are going to be historically bad, potentially, for a White Sox team. Bob, they've been shut out 8 times already.
Oh, my God.
It's April the 23rd, they've been shut out 8 times. I know the pitching in the game today is indescribably good, and I don't know how anyone gets a hit anymore, but I looked at their lineup the other day, their starting lineup. They had one guy hitting over 200 in the entire lineup.
Wow.
8 guys under 200, one over 200.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, they got a bunch of guys hurt, including some key guys. It is really a sad. So as much as I told you, it's so good that some teams that weren't supposed to be good are good. This is really bad and really unhealthy for baseball that a franchise like that that's been around for that long and has had some success is in the trouble it's in. That team is really bad right now, and I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a guy covering that team every day. Actually, I can.
I was living in 21 in D.C. at that time. Yeah, I was. I didn't cover it, but I was living there. I was coaching at Catholic U at that time, and I remember the headlines when they finally won. They put it on the front page of the paper when they finally won a game. I remember that. Was that Frank Robinson's team? Was he managing them? I can't remember.
Yes. So after consecutive loss number 18, he took the writers out to dinner in Minneapolis. And halfway through dinner, I asked Frank, who was a big kidder, I said, Frank, has anyone interesting called you during this losing streak? And he said, yeah, the president called me today. So, again, Frank being a big jokester, I pushed him 3 times on it, and he said, damn it, the president of the United States called me today. I said, Frank, what did he say? He said, Frank, I know what you're going through. And Frank said, Mr. President, you got no idea what I'm going through. That's how bad the Orioles were. And if it weren't for Frank Robinson, Hall of Famer, great manager and a great guy to talk to on a daily basis. Believe me, the writers would have never gotten through that season because Frank kept it interesting for all of us.
No, I can't fathom that. That's a long, that's a lot of games when you stink right out of the chute. That's for sure. No question about that. Let me ask you about the team, obviously, that we have the most local rooting interest in, Cincinnati. They got some dynamic young players. They're over the 500 mark. They're 12-10 in what's been a pretty competitive division. I'm not sure anybody saw that when the season started. But what do you see for them, their prospects for this year and going forward?
Well, you got to love the young talent on that team, obviously, but it really hurts that Matt McClain, who's one of those really good young players, is going to be out for a long time and maybe the entire season.
Mm.
But it's a winnable division. The Reds can win this division. A few things are going to have to happen, and they got to get some more people healthy on this team. But it's hard not to love the talent on this team. I mean, Ellie De La Cruz, you just watch him. It's breathtaking to watch anybody that big play that position. You know, the other day, Bob, he hit 2 homers in 1 game, 1 from each side of the plate, and 1 was an inside-the-park homer.
Yeah.
The last player to do that was Carlos Guillen 20 years ago.
Wow.
So all sorts of wild things happen when you get a bunch of young, hungry, athletic players who are just out there running all over the place. So, I mean, I could like a lot more where the Reds were if they were healthier and they had their second baseman for the full season. But I still think if they're, you know, Hunter Green and Lodolo and some other guys come around, this could be, they could win the division, because I think four, maybe five teams could win the Central. That's how closely grouped that is.
Tim, it's always a pleasure when you join us. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up as the summer rolls on. And as always, we enjoy your work, enjoying your podcasts. Check those out. You can follow them on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, and be entertained and informed, as we all are. You take care of yourself. Thanks again, buddy.
Okay, Bob. Thank you.
All right. I didn't make him laugh, though. Everybody likes when you get him to laugh.
He's got
the second best giggle between the two little dogs in Bluey.
Yeah. And Jack Roseman.
Yeah.
Or Jack Roseman.
Yeah, that's also true. All right, we're going to do a V-Stakes presented by Big League Haircuts.
5-0 Tuesdays yep. and Wednesdays, $5 off a haircut ticket of two or more, two area locations, Taylorsville Road, Bardstown Road. 5-0 Tuesdays, Big League Haircuts. Look good, play hard. Play hard, look good, Big League Haircuts. I always say that backwards.
Let's go see if we can figure out a race here. I'm enjoying kind of doing these historic races. They're kind of fun. Let's see, but I have to make sure I don't, you know, say, okay, pick a number between 1 and 10. There's only 7 horses in the race. Let's see what we can come up with here. See if we can find a damned tasty race here. And the minute it starts, you might, you know, if you're a true horse racing fan, since it's an historic race, excuse me, you might very well, this is a good one. I think let's do this one. You might very well know who wins. Because, you know, around here they know the winners of some very important historical races. So I'm just going to tell you, you'll know the minute we start this race who wins it. But that's okay. We're going to let you pick. Hang on 1 second. I want to tell you how many horses went to the post that particular year. And then we'll give you the numbers. Now, my guess is I'm going to tell you. It's going to be a Kentucky Derby. Okay, so pick a number, but my guess is you probably are not going to want to pick, like, number one, because that horse doesn't ever win. So I'm going to let you pick numbers 1 through, how many horses went to the post that year? 15. 15 horses went to the post. And before we actually play the race for you, I will tell you the post positions, and then you probably will know, those of you who are, reasonably well-versed in horse racing. Once you hear me announce the field, you'll know which horse wins. But you don't know now, so take a shot at it. 1 through 15, and then we come back. Hurry up and get those in, because I can't let you send me the text after I read the field to you, because you'll know who won. So 1 through 15, send us a number. V-Stakes, win yourself a couple of haircuts, win yourself a haircut or a couple of haircuts if the horse goes off at more than 4-1. So I'm going to leave it at that. I can't give you any more clues than that. I'll just tell you it's a very historic race. So text us 1 through 15. If you want to be a bit of a tilt your odds, pick a number that's won the Derby more often than not. At least you can skew it that way. But I will. I'll read the field to you in just a bit, and then you'll hear the race.
437-9680.
Sounds like fun, doesn't it?
It does sound like fun.
All right. So one. You were very enthusiastic about that. I appreciated your response.
Does sound like fun. By Jove, I think we're going to have a good time.
1 through 15. Text it to us. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Play the race. ESPN 680-1057.
The U of L Health orthopedic experts get you back in the game of life faster. We lead the state in robotic surgical procedures that minimize pain and recovery time. Our high-level care and customized surgeries treat everything from shoulders to toes, including spines. And as the official health provider for U of L athletics, we give that same VIP care to every patient. That's the power of you. Visit uofllhealth.org.
This is Jamie Valvano with the Kentuckiana Friends of V. Have you ever wanted to be on the pitch at Lynn Family Stadium? Join us May 12th for our inaugural Bocce and Cars for a Cause. That's right, a bocce tournament on the actual pitch. Never played bocce? Don't know how? Don't worry, we'll teach you the day of. It's a game for all ages and abilities. Make sure to take time and visit the Classic Car Show taking place as well. Hundreds of beautiful cars shining bright. For sponsorship opportunities, to register your team of four, or for more information on this unique event, visit kfov.org. Together, we fight cancer.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 18 and over only. Must be physically located in Kentucky. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Sure, the weather may be cold, but that's no excuse not to look your best. Get a fresh haircut from Big League Haircuts. Two area locations and a great deal for you Tuesdays and Wednesdays. 5-0 Tuesdays. Get $5 off a haircut of two or more. And remember, tune into the V-Show Tuesday and Wednesday for the Big League Haircuts V-Stakes for a chance to win a free haircut and other great prizes. Taylorsville Road, Bardstown Road, two great locations. Play hard, look good at Big League Haircuts.
Hi, this is Paul Rogers. Last summer, I suffered a pretty severe knee sprain, so of course, I called Ellison Bodenhausen Orthopedics right away. They have 24-hour appointments, often on the same day, with one of ENB's 11 certified orthopedic surgeons. Ellison Bodenhausen Orthopedics offers a year-round Monday morning walk-in clinic at their East Point, St. Matthews, and South End locations. This is open to all patients, no appointment is needed, and the hours are from 8 to 9:30 every Monday morning. ENB Orthopedics has four physician office locations, the East Point office off Old Henry Road, Dixie Highway, St. Matthews, that's in the Norton Women and Children's Hospital, and New Albany. ENB Orthopedics has five outpatient physical therapy clinics at East Point, Dixie Highway, St. Matthews, Fern Creek, and New Albany. To schedule an appointment with Ellison Bodenhausen Orthopedics, please call 502-587-1236 or visit their website at enbortho.com.
Show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
So much fun. Crazy fun, I tell you. All right, let me tell you also so I can eliminate some controversy. These were not the silks, the numbers they had on the silks, these horses. This was the post position they started at, okay? Because there were a couple of entries in here. So it was a 1 and 1A, I think. So I'm going by post position. So that's what you got, which is also better in many ways because that's what people care about because you didn't want to get, for example, get post position 1 most years. So that's it. Now, once I read you the field, 80% of you are going to know who wins, but we'll take a listen anyway. And I'll tell you the jockeys, when I know their names, I'll give you their first name. If I only read their last names, because I'm not going to lie to you, I don't know their first name. This race is almost 50 years old. Here's the field for today's V-Stakes. 15 horses go to the post. We wish you the best of luck. At a post position, one is Media with Jean Kruger. Number two is Honeymark with Eddie Delahousse. Number three, post position, Foolish Pleasure with John Vasquez. Number four is Rushing Man with McKnight. Don't know his first name. Number five is Master Derby. McCarg is the jockey there. Number six is Fashion Sale. Gavidio is the rider. Number seven is Bold Chapeau. C.J. Allman, the jockey. Number eight is Prince Thou Art. Braulio Baeza. One of the all-time great jocks rides the eight Prince Thou Art. Again, post position eight. Number nine is Gatch with Espinoso, the jockey. Number 10 is Avatar with Hall of Famer Willie Shoemaker riding the 10 Avatar. Number 11 is Bombay Duck with Aristone, who's the 11.
That's my pick.
Bombay Duck.
I love that name.
Okay. Number 12 is Round Steak with M. Sorry, I don't know, it might be a Latin name, Ole, Hole. I don't know if it's Hole or not. It's H-O-L-E. Leave it at that.
It's just named Hole?
That, well, no, the jockey's name.
Oh.
Yeah. Number 13 is Lafitte Pinkai Jr. on Diabolo. Number 14 is Silva, or the jockey, certainly. He's one of the greats. Angel Cordero Jr. rides the 14, and again, that of the 14 post, not the number 14, if you remember this race, if you're old enough to remember it, Sylvan Place, and rounding out the field out of the 15 hole is Promised City, D-Whited, was the jock. So those of you, if you've already got your entry in, that it counts. If not, after this, no good, because I just gave you the field, and many of you probably know who won this race. Here is them loading the gate. This is when ABC had the rights to the race. You'll hear the last few comments of Howard Cosell, and then you'll hear the call of the race. And I wish you all the best in today's V-Stakes.
One might expect. Now you're watching the horses going to their respective holes. The 13 horses Fashion Sale. The 6 horses Bull Chapeau. We already told you that an obstetrician, Tony Leggio, is one of the owners of that one. Prince Thou Art just went in, a beautiful animal. Gatch is the number 14.
Again, that's their silks. That's not the numbers I gave you were the post positions, and that's where your entries were credited.
Number 7 horses, Avatar, going into the 10th hole. I stood there with the shoe this morning. You saw that interview earlier. That is squarely in the middle of the track, and the shoe left the position. 8, Bombay Duck. 9 is Round State. And the 10 horse, Diablo. He'll be in the 13th hole. Now, with 1A going in, let's go up to Chick Anderson for the call of the race.
One more horse third on the outside. Promise City into the starting gate there.
Can't even hear him.
Master Derby is alongside. Then on the rail, it's Honey Mark up on the outside. Here's Bombay Duck going for the lead.
Bombay Duck!
Bombay Duck on the outside.
Quack, quack, son!
Rushing down in second. Then it's back to third, Avatar goes fourth. Sylvan Place is now fifth. Then further back is Brown Stake and Honey Mark. Diablo on the outside, followed by Master Derby. Then it's Gatch, Foolish Pleasure. Along the inside, Media. On the outside, Bull Chapeau, then Promise City. And finally, Prince Thou Art. They're moving to the backstretch. The leader, Bombay Duck, moves away. 2.5, Avatar, second and neck. Rushing Man is third by a length and a half. Fashion Sale holds fourth. Then Sylvan Place, fifth. Diablo, sixth on the outside. Foolish Pleasure has moved to seventh. Round Stake is eighth. Honey Mark is ninth. And Media is tenth. Into the turn again. The leader still Bombay Duck leading at a length and a half.
Back, back.
Avatar into second by a half a length. Looking for room on the rail. Rushing Man gets through. Diablo has moved with a rush on the outside. Those four right together into the turn. On the turn, it's Avatar and Diablo. They hooked up again. Diablo on the outside ahead in front. Avatar on the rail has the four lengths. Then further back, Sylvan Place has moved to third. Master Derby is now fourth. On the rail, Foolish Place is sixth as they come toward the head of the stretch. At the head of the stretch, Avatar on the inside ahead. On the outside, Diablo. Then driving into third, Prince Star, with Master Derby coming on. In the clearing the finish. On the inside, Avatar, Diablo, Prince Star is coming with the drive from Master Derby. Nearing the finish, close quarters, Avatar, Prince Star. Prince Star on the outside has the lead ahead. It's Prince Star holding the lead on the inside, Avatar. At the rail, Prince Star, now Foolish Pleasure. Foolish Pleasure to the lead, Avatar. Then it's Diablo.
Chick identified the wrong horse. It was Foolish Pleasure that whole time. He was giving himself an out there. They were badly bunched. He had Avatar and the other horse dueling down the stretch. It was Foolish Pleasure the whole time.
I've heard of Foolish Pleasure. Yeah,
Foolish Pleasure won it.
Wow.
Poor Chick. Wow, I didn't realize that. Let me see if...
And also Diablo. Diablo. Shoemaker's horse came out a little bit.
Nope, let's listen to the end of the race. He doesn't mention Foolish Pleasure until he realizes. Listen.
Diablo, Vince Stoward is coming with the drive from Master Derby. Nearing the finish, close quarters, Avatar, Vince Stoward. Vince Stoward on the outside has the lead ahead. It's Vince Stoward holding the lead on the inside, Avatar. After that, Vince Stoward, now Foolish Pleasure.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I didn't know that he did that. It was all the whole time. It was Foolish Pleasure, man.
Imagine if we had.
I wouldn't have done. I didn't do that on purpose to try and, embarrass his memory. He was one of the great track announcers, but good Lord.
He got it mixed up.
He had the wrong horse? I don't know if he got asked to retire after that race, but that was not his best call. Post position three is the winner. It was Foolish Pleasure, and we'll notify one of you who won. Congratulations. We'll see you tomorrow.
And when you download the Kroger app, you can enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. Plus, you can earn fuel points to save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. And with a Boost membership...